It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into a special edition of the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Glad to be with you. The guys will be joining us in just a little while as we have a lot of great guests coming up. As a matter of fact, we have Josh Smith who will be joining us, who played for Ruffin McNeil and obviously Skip Holtz. And we have one of the legendary quarterbacks of all time during the Logan era in the mid-90s. And that's Marcus Crandall, the great kid from Robertsonville, who's turned out to be a great man now. We'll be talking to him later on. But first, we had a chance to go to basketball practice. And after practice, we had a chance to talk to Coach Dooley. And, of course, from Hoist the Colors, Stephen Igo and myself had a chance to sit down with him. And let's go to him right now.
Return home for conference play. I know it's another tough opponent, but to get back inside Minji's.
Well, I think it'll be good. We've got a great home atmosphere, and I think the guys will be excited, and it'll be good to be back out there.
What did you guys learn from the SMU game, or what can you learn from going against an opponent that talented?
Well, I think one of the things, I think you get more familiar with the athleticism. I think what happened yesterday, we had a good first 18 minutes, and even going to the half, although they controlled the last couple minutes, we're down 10, which is more than a workable number. It's coming out after the half, and then we had a little bit of a systematic problem. It just fell apart real quick, and we didn't make shots, and I think we lost a little bit of our confidence. We can't have those things happen.
Coach, I want to ask you, as far as the basketball, it's a game of runs. I know we have a lot of talent here. Is sometimes that how you manage the runs as far as a mental game, part of the game?
There's no doubt. I mean, 10 is a manageable number, and then you come out and give up back-to-back threes, one of which we fell down. Running back in transition, those are things that can't happen. And we missed a number of layups that could have, stemmed the tie. We're down four, we miss a layup, give up a three, which, so instead of being down two, you're down seven. I think those are confidence things, too.
Cincinnati, they lost a few key pieces from last year, but they just kind of reloaded. I mean, what do you see?
They're what your program should be. The younger guys in the program, guys like Jennifer, have fought their way through for 4 years, didn't play a ton of minutes as young kids. Now all of a sudden they're key contributors. They've got experienced guys. The guys that they have in the program have been through wars. They plug another guy in. Cumberland's fought through deals. Guys like Brooks and Scott and those guys now are getting opportunities to play. And then they're Broom coming off the bench. They're experienced.
What can you maybe say to the fans as far as how important their impact could be? I know the students are kind of getting back into town, but in this type of game,
Our fans, I think, want to have a really good athletics program, and this is a big-time league. I mean, you're bringing in one of the premier programs in the country, eight NCAA tournaments. Throughout the season, you're going to see the Memphises, the Temples is a top-10 winning program. Memphis has been to Final Fours. Houston's been to Final Fours. We've got a really good league, and part of this is we need our fans to support us. We need to put a good product on the court, but I think they can help us win games.
I know one of the things that you guys have been doing here is a $5 ticket. So do you think that's helped having fans closer to the court?
Well, I think it's a great deal. I mean, I think during Christmas break, and I think John is on board with this, you have student tickets and students are out of town. Why wouldn't you sell those tickets and have a good atmosphere? And it's something that I think can help. And I think the atmosphere against A&T was really good, and I'm sure we'll have a great atmosphere tomorrow against Cincinnati.
Was it encouraging to see Foster kind of give you some good minutes the other night?
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to something that we're talking about. Cincinnati, all those young guys have been through playing behind juniors and seniors, and our freshmen, for the most part, really, most of them shouldn't be on the court yet, and it is what it is because we're young, but he's got to figure some of these things out, and part of the problem is he hasn't had someone to teach him that, which is what it is, and hopefully going forward, he'll be a guy that can teach the younger guys coming in. This is what's done. This is how we do. This is why we do.
And, Coach, one of the things I remind Van, no excuses, but this is a really young team. And they're having to literally learn on the job, so to speak, instead of like what you're talking about, Cincinnati, where you have guys that are already starters and those guys would normally come off the bench.
Well, I mean, youth is not an excuse. It's a reality. But, I mean, no one cares we're young. I mean, Cincinnati doesn't care we're young, and SMU doesn't care. SMU doesn't care. I tell their guys that all the time. So,
good luck to you, Coach, against Cincinnati tomorrow.
Thank you.
And that was a great talk there with Coach Joe Dooley as he's getting ready for the big game Cincinnati this weekend on Saturday, 1 o'clock. Don't forget to get your tickets, folks, at 1-800-DIAL-ECU. And you obviously can go to ecupirates.com as well. They had some $5 tickets as you're listening to this right now before the game. I don't know if they have any left with that great price. Students are still out of town, and they had some extra student tickets, so they sold those. So make sure that you get a chance to do that. ecupirates.com or 1-800-DIAL-ECU. All right, I had a chance to talk to one of the bright spots of the game on Wednesday night was, of course, and he's been that way all season long, the freshman, the rookie, Jaden Gardner. And let's go to Jaden right now. Here with Jaden Gardner, and right before here is the day before the big game and the first home game for the conference in Cincinnati. You guys ready for him?
Yeah, we're preparing. We're getting a lot of rest, shots up, preparing for their defense and long and very athletic people that they have on their team.
I know it's tough to lose, especially on the road. Again, the very first AAC game against SMU, a really good team. But what did you guys always hear that with coaches and somebody who's played and coached? You always learn from losses. What did you guys learn from the SMU loss?
We just learned we have to, once we have the lead, we got to try to keep it. And in the second half, we got to be able to handle runs. And we have to be able to fight back after the team goes on a run. And we have to come on a run our own. We just have to learn from that.
That was very strange the way the second half started with that big run. What can you tell after you guys had a chance to look at film and see what happened?
We watched a little bit on the first half. We didn't watch it a lot on the second half because the second half we just fell apart after they went on that big run and we couldn't get any offense going and we couldn't get any stops either.
I know you've been consistent for the team as far as this game against Cincinnati. What do you guys have to do for the first home game with in the conference to get a win?
We got to play our game and we got to be aggressive. We got to go to the backboard strong. We got to rebound good. We got to get shots up. We got to play great defense. And because this Cincinnati is a really great team, they've been in the postseason the last seven seasons. So we got to be ready for them.
One question I have for you is something I'm a stickler about, even when I've coached and played, is free throws. One of the things I've heard from Pirate Nation, a lot of people that talk to me, is about your free throw shooting ability. Is that something you practice all the time?
Yeah, I practice my free throw shooting all the time. I pride myself on being a good free throw shooter, and it's free points at the line as well.
That's what they say, free throws, and there's a lot of guys at your size, at your position, that they may have 50, 60%, and I've always said if you could be a tremendous weapon if you could just make those free throws.
Yeah, no doubt. I believe you.
Well, good luck to you against Cincinnati. I know you're working hard, and big game tomorrow.
Thank you. Come out and support the game. Thank you.
What a tremendous talent Jaden is, and I love his free throw shooting. And, of course, we were just talking about that, but he's really blossomed and done very well. Heritage High School out of Wake Forest, North Carolina, not too far down the road from Greenville, and we're very excited to have him in Greenville with a purple and gold jersey on for sure. Next up is our first, he's making his debut on the podcast, and had one of the freshmen that really had one of the bright spots of the SMU game, and that's what this year has been about, is guys learning how to play with other guys, and now they're having to learn how to play in the American, and that's Ty Foster, and let's talk to him now. Have Ty Foster here, and I know it was a tough loss on Wednesday night, but you were one of the bright spots against SMU, a really good team in Dallas, a road game. How did it feel for your individual game, first off?
I felt good. I just had to get into a flow, get into a rhythm, and then, just play basketball at the end of the day. Fortunately, we came out on the short end of the stick, but we're going to keep fighting, and it's going to get better.
Very first game of the American, and you being a freshman, everybody talks about this is a big boy league, this is a big league. How did it feel to play in your first conference game?
Yeah, it's a big boy league, but I think I was prepared for it. I think me and all my team was prepared for it because we work hard. We just had a bad game, but we won't keep going out like that. It's a big boy league, though, for sure.
And the good thing about it, you can learn from a loss, and now you have Cincinnati coming into your own house, so to speak. What do you guys have to do to beat Cincinnati? I know that they're a really good team.
Yeah, they're a good team. They're really aggressive on defense. They play some tricky defenses, too. So we just got to be aggressive. We just got to focus on our keys to the game, and we should be fine.
What have you guys worked on from the loss on Wednesday night?
Taking care of the ball, moving, making simple plays, and just being tuned in with the with what the objective to the game is, so that we can win.
I know with Cincinnati, they've always had a really good program all throughout the years. And I know Coach, with the guys like you coming in, he really wants to build a big-time program here at East Carolina.
Yep, that's what we're working hard to do every day. And it's just going to be hard work. We're just going to have to keep working. It's not going to happen overnight.
No doubt about it. A lot of hard work. It's definitely a marathon, not a sprint, as they say. As far as other coaches, I know that we have rock star coaches for the assistants as well. How do you guys feel about playing for them?
We love the coaches. We try, do whatever they say. We try to be in line with them at all times because we know they are real good coaches, real experienced coaches, and they know way more than us. So, obviously we're just going to have to listen and see what happens, see where it goes.
What about Pirate Nation? Now they're selling $5 tickets, and the crowds have been pretty good this year. What would you say to them?
I appreciate the crowds. I love the crowds. I wish they keep coming because it's going to get good.
Good luck to you tomorrow against Cincinnati.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Steph with Ty Foster. Again, folks, the game is at 1 o'clock, and that will be a big-time game in Greenville with the University of Cincinnati. The Bearcats coming in. What a tremendous program, as Coach Dooley was talking about, and they continue to be successful year after year after year. And instead of rebuilding like we are in Greenville, East Carolina, they are reloading. So we're looking forward to that matchup. Again, get your tickets at 1-800-DIAL-ECU, or you can simply go to ecupirates.com. Well, it's that time of the show again, folks, that we want to get to, and we have two big guests, and the guys are joining me right now. Here now with Marcus Crandall, and a great East Carolina quarterback, and definitely in my Hall of Fame, and for Martin County, and played a lot of great years, and with myself, Kyle, and Bubba. Marcus, thank you so much for being with us, man.
Hey, I appreciate you guys asking me to come on. I look forward to sitting here and talking with you guys.
We actually did a nostalgia party football player reunion. We're going to have that again, and love to have you at O'Cool's this summer. But you were one on my bucket list to have on that show. But, hey, we're glad to have you. It's perfect winter. We have you here on the podcast.
Yes, indeed. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. Oh, cool. That used to be our spot where we used to go, and some of the guys and I used to go after games, before games, and all that good stuff. It was a great spot. We used to go in there and eat up some wings.
Yeah, well, hopefully you can do that with us again. In fact, we'll talk to you more later, but we're going to do something special for the spring game and love to have you for that. We're going to try to see as many football players if we can get back. We love our new coach with Mike Houston, and so we're looking forward to that in the spring.
Okay, April. Yeah, I'll definitely be there, for sure, definitely. And if you need any help trying to get a hold of guys, I can help out with that as well.
Thank you. Right now, we want to put the spotlight on you. I know that you don't like the spotlight, but hopefully you can definitely go back down memory lane. One of the things I told you when I reached out to you is that I'm from Williamson, you're from Robertsonville, and also you were the quarterback for most of the time of my college years. It was really cool to have somebody like a lot of pride there, not only from Martin County, but playing for East Carolina and winning to boot.
Yes, and it's a special thing when you come from a place like this where, small towns, and you set your dreams and hopes and dreams of doing something and you accomplish it. It's just good for young people to see as they, have dreams and goals. Just to see someone else from the same sort of walk go through it and be successful. So it was good. It was good process, a good experience, and met a lot of great people along the way, man. That's the main thing.
Marcus, when you were growing up in Martin County, did you grow up an East Carolina fan, or were you a Tar Heel fan, or when did you start following Pirate football?
You know what? Football-wise, man, I watched a lot of different sports, a lot of different teams in football. I watched Alabama. I used to watch all the ACC teams, Army-Navy games. I watched all of it. But I have to admit, man, I was a diehard Carolina basketball fan, Tar Heel basketball fan. But football-wise, I was pretty much just watching different teams up until I was getting recruited and all those kind of things, and I was starting to narrow down where I wanted to go. And I actually followed ECU the whole year of 91 and then the 92 Peach Bowl. I think that was a significant part in me and a lot of other guys wanted to come here.
Yeah, back then, you know, you're talking about 91, 92, the Peach Bowl year following East Carolina, it ain't like it is now where we can just turn on ESPN or ESPN2 and watch East Carolina. It was listen to a lot of games, you know, listen to Jeff Charles call most of the games. There was very few on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. It was it was pretty interesting. And, you know, and especially I've been out of the country for about 20 years, so I really haven't seen much at all over the years, and I feel sort of bad for that. But, you know, there's the internet and all that, and keep up with the scores. But it's not the same as far as watching it on TV and being into it in a different way.
Right.
So,
I had one question for you, Marcus. Got to see you a lot over the years, and one of my favorite, even though we lost the game, one of my favorite games was certainly, as far as venues are concerned, away games, was at Neyland Stadium in Tennessee. What was it like playing your top-notch quarterback, and you go to a place like that? What is it like playing in a big venue like Neyland Stadium in Tennessee?
Man, it's so easy to get caught up in the wow factor of, man, you walk into the stadium and then it's all orange and white. And then that year it was all, you know, 16 jerseys everywhere. So it was almost an overwhelming feeling, but it was, you know, those are the kind of games that we, I know the guys that I played with, and I know a lot of guys before us that, you know, we had that attitude of, you know, that's the kind of atmosphere we liked. We enjoyed it. We kind of used some reverse psychology as far as, you know, playing at home. But it was a great atmosphere for college football and the students and the people that support Tennessee football.
Marcus, that was the first game of the 95 season. If I remember right, trying to remember the games in order. The second game of the year, I believe, was the game at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse in 95, where we got down, what was it, 21-7? Bubba, what was that score? You remember?
21-0.
21-0.
In the first half.
You brought us all the way back in the second half to beat Syracuse. What do you remember about that game?
You know what? I think that game right there is just, I think that was, it just epitomizes how we thought as a team, all right, I think we thought that we were never out of a game. That was our mentality going into every game. And then also, I think that was one of the games where, you know, I from a quarterback standpoint, you trusted in your receivers and all those kind of things. And so I just remember one play where it was designed to go to Scott Richards, down in the end zone, and I kind of looked it off first and just trusted he was going to be there on the wheel route, and he was there and made the play and all those kind of things. So I think that just kind of epitomizes what we're all about as far as everybody being there for one another. And we fought back and came back and pulled it off, man. Good.
What was your favorite win while you were at East Carolina? Would it be that Syracuse game, or do you have a favorite win in particular?
I don't have one in particular. I don't have one because I enjoyed every moment of it, every win, every loss. I probably learn more from the losses, especially when it comes to life. We learn a lot from those losses, and just being out there after a loss and having to go and run those 300s on Sundays, it wasn't a good feeling, man. The whole experience was great for myself, I know, you know, because we endured so much through the years there as far as preparation and then getting out there on the field, overcoming a lot of adversity, you know, as a team, as personally. There was a lot. And so, you know, just a lot of life experiences as well that you can take from it.
Yeah, speaking of losses, I remember the Thursday night game on ESPN against Southern Miss in Greenville, where they just came in here and just beat the dog crap out of us. And you're talking about learning from a loss. You remember what y'all did the next week, don't you, Marcus?
Yeah, that was the Miami.
Correct. Correct. Very next weekend, you guys go down to Miami and just destroy the Hurricanes.
Yeah, and that's how we were, man. It was, you know, we lose and then we put the game behind us, right? We go in and watch the film and then we, you know, we get those 300s in and we're ready to hit the field right after that because we're so upset that we had to run them and all that. So that's just the mentality we have. We just take it one game at a time and then, you know, don't carry the junk from the last game into the next game except for the attitude of we're going to take it out on somebody else and we're going to come out of here with a W.
Do you happen to remember which one of your teammates after the Miami game said into the camera, that won't no upset, we were just upset?
No, I don't, actually.
Dude, Bubba, do you remember that?
I don't remember that one. I do remember one of the Hart twins, maybe actually both of the Hart twins on ESPN. Okay. They said, we came to prove ourselves to the country. Now here we is.
I was going to say, they sound like a Hart twin or B.J. Crane.
Oh, B.J. was, of course, a lot of modern-day Pirate fans remember Zeke Bigger and how he never shied away from a microphone. B.J. Crane was like that back in the mid-90s.
Yes, indeed.
Now, Marcus, obviously you came onto the scene in 1993, Steve Logan's second year. Of course, Michael Anderson had a solid season in 1992, and then in 1993, Michael Anderson had gotten some trouble and been kicked off the team. So you had a chance to come in and start as a freshman. And your very first game Thursday night against Syracuse, I remember it well. You hooked up with Morris Letcher several times. Do you recall that one?
Yeah, I do recall the first one. That and it's a good thing they didn't have instant replay that game. I think it wasn't a catch if we looked at it. And but Morris, he was that type of guy that, you know, whenever he made a play, he would act it up and came out of there, you know, jumping and saying it was a touchdown and a catch and all that, and the referees fell for it and we got the score. So he was another go-to guy that did a lot for ECU, and
that was the infamous game.
Great person.
Wasn't that the game, Marcus? I was there where the frat guys got in a big fight on ESPN, and we went a while without, if my memory serves me right, without playing a night game because there was a lot of, imagine that, a tailgate with a lot of drinking in a night game. But I think that was the same, I believe that was the same game.
I don't remember that part.
You guys,
he was too busy worried about the game.
there was a student section. In fact, it was in the old student section, which is now Pirate Club section 16, 17, and 18, and I was like a section or two away from it, and these guys start fighting on national television. It was kind of embarrassing because, you know, we have here we are having a spotlight. You guys are playing and playing your hearts out, and then these guys, who knows why they got in a fight, and ESPN actually had to give the film to East Carolina. Those guys were expelled. It was kind of a, I don't know, for people listening, they may remember that game, but it was
I absolutely remember that, Dave. I was actually sitting in the section directly across from that in the south stands, and I just recall, even though I was 12 years old and like you, I was so embarrassed and afraid that people were going to see that on national TV instead of the ball game.
In fact, ESPN went away from the. They went away from the, not trying to get too technical in the weeds, but they went away from the shot because it was so blatant. It was right there. Like, you guys were playing the game, and it's, like, right there. There's nothing you can do. Yeah.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, because there's a little, there's stairs there that lead down to the field. And if I'm not mistaken, it was on that platform that leads down to the stairs. I mean, that goes to the stairs and then down to the field. So somebody got like roundhouse kicked or like karate kick in the chest. It was one of those. Just everybody went, ooh.
Is that the infamous fight between the frat guys and the Marines? I've heard about that. I've heard people talk about that several times.
Is that right? Man,
it may be. Sorry, I didn't mean to digress, but that was just a weird moment.
We got Marcus on to talk about the best fights in Dowdy Pick'em Stadium.
That I was oblivious of.
Marcus, I'm gonna bring up one that I know you're gonna remember, and you may not have good memories of, and you'd probably like to maybe fight some people after that one. The UCF game in '93. Where you got injured. What are your memories of that?
They're very vague. I mean, it was, I just remember throwing the football, rolling out and getting outside the pocket and throwing the football. And I kind of remember someone, you know, grabbing from behind or something like that and getting pulled down. And I remember it being wet, that game. And apparently my foot got caught in the turf and turned the wrong way. I think it was the second time that injury had happened. I think Joe Thousands was the first.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good feeling. And it was partially, you know, it had a lot to do with, you know, my ankle wasn't actually taped that game. I didn't have it taped up, and so I thought it was just a sprained ankle. So I'm lying on the ground and about to get up, and then I looked down and I saw it, and I almost passed out from what I understand, what I heard. So I almost went into shock, and that's all I kind of remember, really. Just guys, the medical crew coming out on the field and putting it back into place and all those kind of things, and then being carted off. Or ambulanced off.
Did you have to have surgery on your ankle? Or?
Yeah, I did. I did. I had surgery. I have a metal plate in my lower left leg, and that's still in. And I had screws put in the ankle, and the screws got put out, got taken out. But the metal plate is still in.
Well, you obviously didn't hamper the rest of your career. You went on to, you know, 90, you have a great season, 94, 95, 96. In 96, I remember you got injured again towards the end of the season. What was that injury at?
I think it's Arkansas State, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, and that was a knee injury on my left leg, on the left side. And I think I threw a touchdown pass to Larry Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
And on the right side, and just as I threw it, I think he was crawling on the ground and then hit my knee. It was late hit. He hit my knee, and thankfully, thank God, at that time, I guess it could have been a whole lot worse, in retrospect, because my right knee kind of saved it from going all the way in, if you can picture that or imagine that.
Wow.
That was another bad one. But thank God I made it back and was able to get healthy and carry on from there, too.
I had a couple questions. The first is we talked about the 95 Syracuse game. We talked about Miami in 96. Another game that really stands out about your career is that 94 game down in Columbia when we lit up the Gamecocks, put up 56, and you had a huge day through the air. I know Mitchell Galloway had a big day. Of course, he was from Bennettsville and going back to his home state and doing that. And then we had some of Coach Logan's things that he became well known for, like a fake punt for a touchdown, it seems like, or maybe a fake field goal for a touchdown. Talk a little bit about that game.
Yeah, I mean, that game, what I remember about it, and you kind of alluded to it, is that it was Mitchell Galloway, and actually there were some other guys, Alan Williams, you know, those guys from South Carolina. And that was the makeup of our team of guys that were passed over by places that they really wanted to go, like, you know, and like Mitchell, South Carolina, and Clemson, and all those teams there. They were passed over, looked over, and just going back there was homecoming for him. You know, and so I think as a team, collectively, we're more excited about going in there and trying to get a – we say we don't think about those things, but truth be told, I mean, we had a little bit of chip on our shoulders because of that, and we wanted to kind of get that win for him, and it was so good and fulfilling to see him play the way he did in that game and come up big for us.
Marcus,
I had one thing is that it seems like that we had that mentality almost like a street fighter. Anytime, anywhere, any place, we'll play you. It doesn't matter. Do you feel like the program, we're at that same – I know we've had some tough times, but we heard a lot in 2018 about chip on the shoulder, but it doesn't seem to resonate the same way. When you guys were playing, it was the real deal.
Yeah, I mean – I think in that sport you have to. I mean, in football, because it's so physical, it's a physical game. There's no way around it. It's going to be physical contact, and if you look at the, you know, all the things around it, it. Every time you have contact, it's like having a little mini car wreck, right? And so you have to be. You have to have an attitude and going in that you're going to go in and dominate the other team and have that chip, whatever is going to give you that edge to help you perform out there to your best. And so we had a lot of guys that had that, whether it was natural or conceived from, you know, incidents or situations like I just talked about, as far as going into places where, you know, someone didn't want you. We found a way to just kind of go in and have that mental edge, so to speak.
My other question, Marcus, was obviously you had 4 years under Coach Logan. He's someone that's highly respected for his offensive mind and his ability to coach quarterbacks. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, he took a guy that used to be an option quarterback, myself, in high school. And going from calling audibles from plays that I used to run in high school to getting me to audible at the line of scrimmage by myself, I think that says a lot for the type of guy he is, the type of coach. You know, he was very patient with myself and a lot of other quarterbacks that came through. As far as I know, he's just, you know, words can't really explain or express, you know, what he means to the program still, and what he meant to us as a group, for all the guys that were under him here, because of his, you know, he had that funny, that joking, that attitude, but he was so serious. If you understand what I mean, like he was serious, but he just came out funny sometimes, you know, and it just lightened us up, but we knew the intent. We knew the intensity of it. We knew the intent and all those kind of things as far as going out there. We're going to take it serious when we hit the field and go out there. We're going to pretty much try to run through a wall for them, right? And so just a great guy, great family guy. I know just from their coaching staff, he always expressed, you know, get your work done and go home and have fun with your family and spend time with your family. And so I had a lot of respect for that as well.
But Andrew Bayes, that was, of course, an All-American punter for us and has been on 94.3 The Game as well. That's what he has shared, some of his Coach Logan stories when he's been on 94.3 at various times. Do you have any specific stories that you can share?
That we can have on the podcast?
Man, I'm not a good impersonator.
I know I put you on the spot, but
I mean, it was the game that is not a funny one, but I can give you a funny one from guys that, or some, I can paraphrase a funny one.
Yeah.
And what the guy said, what he did. But the one I remember was in the Syracuse game and just being in there at halftime. And I said this on 94.3 as well. You know, he just went down and he was like, we're going to throw the ball 100 times, 50 times, or whatever it was. And we're going to win the football game. And that's pretty much what he did. You know, he came out and he called almost every play was a pass. And everybody, you know, just believed in it and bought into that. And we're all in and came back and won the football game. But from a different perspective, no, I'm actually going to give you a different. I'll go.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Marcus. Well, what comes to mind first? You always got to go with that. That's the right answer.
I'm actually going to go with it when we play Central Florida the next time. Okay. I think he asked me to come out of the room, and I think, you know, just how he motivated us. Just give you an example and just talking about how, you know, just going against that team again, the guy, the team that hurt me in 93, wanted the guys to go out there and just play their butts off for me, for us, and go out there and get that win. And so from what I understand, it wasn't a pretty face, if you can understand what I mean. It was very intense. And guys took it to heart, right? And so, but he can be, some of them were saying it was so hard to kind of take him serious because of, you know, the way he is. And but obviously the results speak for itself, right?
I remember one of my favorite times is even though after the loss after the West Virginia game in 96 and 10-9 and we lose in Morgantown and you guys had gone for it for two instead of going for it at that time. But finally, we had the overtime, and I'll never forget him. You know, he says, "You go for it every time at East Carolina," and I love that.
That was actually the following week after the South Carolina win. Yeah, it was the following week after the South Carolina win in '96.
Yeah,
he was referencing the West Virginia game the week before, and he said, "We won today on the last play of the game last week." Because you go for it every time at East Carolina. You don't play at East Carolina. You don't coach at East Carolina with a weak heart.
That's one of my favorite ones that I can hear him right now in that post game.
Man. Yeah, that and another one I'll bring up about Coach Logan is actually, again, against South Carolina. You talked about it earlier, Marcus, the 94 game against South Carolina. Or y'all dropped, was it 54 on them or whatever it was. And I remember the post-game show, never will forget, Brian Bailey went to interview him on the sideline. It was being televised locally by WNCT. And Bailey was on the sideline. And Brian went to interview Logan after the big win over South Carolina from the SEC. And Logan was pissed. And he was pissed because we had to score 50-some points to win the game. He said we should have won that game 28-7, 28-14, something like that. He said we can't keep playing defense like this if we expect to win ball games. And I love that. I used to love that about Logan.
Yeah.
Logan used to he would be more angry after a win.
He was like somber and very self-spoken after a loss. It seemed like.
Yeah.
Like you think he would be angry.
At least with the press. I don't know how he was with you guys in practice. But at least in the press conferences, he would come across more angry after a win.
Yeah, no, he was pretty. He'd be pretty upset at the and vice versa. You know, we didn't put up enough points, right? And defense showed out. And for instance, I mean, like that West Virginia game, we offense really didn't show up, really, and defense played their tails off and found a way to kind of get us to overtime, get us to a chance to get into overtime or whatever, and to go for two, then get into overtime. But we had a chance to win the football game.
Am I remembering right the year before that against West Virginia in '95 in Greenville? I'm trying to remember. It's hard to remember every game, you know, and you may not remember this either, Marcus. Did we start the 95 game against West Virginia off with a bomb for a touchdown?
No, the 95 was 95
to Larry Shannon. Yeah, it wasn't the season opener, but we played West Virginia in Greenville in 95.
Right,
and we hit Larry Shannon with the deep ball early, and then we built something like a 21-0 or 21-3 lead.
That's right. Yeah, I knew it wasn't the season opener. Yeah, but I was thinking we early in the game, Marcus. You hit Larry Shannon with a bomb for a touchdown to go up 7-0. Do you remember that?
Vaguely, man. I vaguely remember it. I kind of.
There's gonna be a test later, Marcus. We're gonna have a test.
Isn't that funny when other people remember things you did more than you
man,
did?
It's awesome, man. It's good. It's good. it was a lot of it. I mean, it was special with Larry. It was I had a good connection there, and, as well as a lot of the other guys. That's what I love about playing here, is that we had we utilized everyone and got everybody involved, and so. It was good. I got to the point where Coach Logan just coached me up and had me prepared, ready to face any defense, pretty much. And we had our days, and we had our bad days as well as the good ones. But you know, we're well prepared overall.
You guys, I was just going to say, Marcus, you guys may sound corny or cheesy, but it really seemed like watching the games from the stands, and then 96 started following the team. It seemed like you guys were really loved each other on there. Like you really got along, and the chemistry was unbelievable with you guys during that period of time.
Well, when we stepped on the field, man, it's a feeling that when you know someone has your back, it's an awesome feeling, and you're gonna go out and play for the next guy. Right, and so you look to your left, you're going to play it hard for him. You look to your right, and that was it. You know, it was a true brotherhood of football, of sports, and you know, because these guys, you know, we understood the importance of 11 guys doing their job, right, and that gives us a better chance of winning the football game.
I'm gonna throw one more game at you. I know you've been generous with your time. But one just came to mind. It's one of my favorite games in Carolina history. I can't believe I'm just now bringing this up. 1995, M.M. Roberts Stadium, The Rock, Southern Mississippi. The game where you guys, East Carolina goes down to Southern Miss. It is back and forth all ball game. And you drive. We have a drive. You lead a drive at the end of the game. Get us in field goal position. And then Chad Holcomb with the fake field goal, pass interference, and then we kick the field goal for the win. What do you remember about that game and just playing Southern Miss in general?
We had that natural rivalry with them, right? That was, you know, it became quite the rivalry. And I remember that game. Yeah, we're down and having to drive down. And what I remember about that last drive. A couple of things. One I won't mention. I remember because Jason Nichols, he was part of that big comeback there as far as the drive, because he had a crucial catch on the sideline that helped us move the chains and being able to or put us in position to go for the fake and all those things, right? And so just because Jason, he was one of those guys that, you know, he would always say, man, don't throw that ball early. You know, just wait till you turn around to see it, right? And so and I told him I was in the huddle. I think I remember telling him anyway that, you know, I got to throw it early because, you know, those guys are going to be coming. So they're going to be playing soft and they got to throw it early. So you just got to get your head around. And he did, man. And made the catch. It was a big time catch for us, and tiptoed on the sideline, and then the rest is academic, man.
That was a great rivalry. I hope we can get that one back. I know it sounds weird, but I really miss having Southern Miss on the schedule for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And guys, that was of course the old.
Times.
No doubt. And that was the old Liberty Bowl Alliance from pre-Conference USA by a couple of years. And that game was crucial because, of course, that year we started 3-3 and had lost a heartbreaker up at Cincinnati. And then, of course, the game at Tennessee. And so that was a pivotal turning point and really allowed us to make the Liberty Bowl and finish 9-3.
Yeah, and beat Sanford and Liberty Bowl.
I beg your pardon?
So unfinished business. Well, that was the theme.
Unfinished business. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, winning the Liberty Bowl.
Man, you guys are good, man.
Do you happen to remember, Marcus, in 95 when you guys went to the Liberty Bowl? We were talking about this the other day with some assistant coaches and former Pirates on the Oklahoma staff. About the swag that they got for their appearance in the Orange Bowl. Do you guys get much swag in 95 for that Liberty Bowl? Do you remember what you got? Was it just like a watch, a ring?
I think we got watches that year.
Okay, yeah, so not the big, not the gift cards and the PlayStations and all that.
We didn't get very much at all that year, I don't think. I know we always got sweatsuits and all those kind of things, but it wasn't a lot, man. It wasn't a lot, but you know what? We weren't there for, you know, all that stuff is good, and
right.
You play for your teammates and you play for, you know, get that feeling of winning. Right?
You got that trophy. That's the most important thing.
They got a trip to Silky O'Sullivan's.
There you go.
Oh my God. He recently passed away, unfortunately.
What's that?
Like
sorry?
In the last year or two.
Silky O'Sullivan passed away.
Silky O'Sullivan of Memphis passed away recently. Yeah. You got the most important thing. You got the victory over the Stanford Cardinal. And that's the deal. You know, when you look back in the history of East Carolina football, that's the only victory, to my knowledge, we've ever had over a Pac-12 opponent.
Yeah, that's the word. That's the word. I kind of hear that a lot. Since I've been back here, it was the last time we won the Liberty Bowl. Yep, so we got to get these guys ready, get the team fired up and ready to go for next season.
Before we got the right man there, Mike Houston.
I was going to ask you, Marcus, before we let you go, and thank you so much for your time, and you've been awesome as I thought you and knew what you would be. Wanted to ask you, what are you up to now? I know the fans would love to know, and for the folks listening now that are big fans of Marcus Crandall, what are you doing these days?
Man, first and foremost, man, I gotta give honor to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, man. I've been redeemed. I got saved again and water baptism, so I'm very, very, very proud of that. Just changed my life and putting him first has been a tremendous difference in my life. Secondly, I can't say the name because of the rules and regulations, but I'm doing employee benefits for a company, and so doing some insurance. And so if you know anyone that
can we say the animal? Can we say the animal for the commercial at least?
What
kind of animal?
I can't see. You can see what you want.
Okay. It's a duck.
On social media and see it. But there you go. So that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to reconnect with some business owners and people that I know to network and kind of get in front of people to build a business that way. So that's what I'm doing. And I work with a young man that has helped me out tremendously as far as getting involved and building it on a steady pace here. Cecil Jackson is my manager, and Steven Stocks is my regional manager. So those guys have been very helpful, along with everyone else with the Aflac family.
I don't know the rules. You got to take that out.
I said you had to cut that one out.
All right, we definitely will. I'll look out for
the
you.
Last point there. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, certainly want people Pirates supporting Pirates.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Well, we appreciate you very much, man, and hopefully we can stay connected to you. And you're always welcome on this podcast. And if I'm going to die trying, I want you in the ECU Hall of Fame, and also one of your teammates, Junior Smith. Both of you deserve to be in it. And I walk by, I'll be by there tomorrow looking at that and wondering why you guys are not in it. I know that you guys aren't going to like promote yourself, but I'll die trying because both of you deserve to be in it.
I'll definitely promote Junior Smith, man. He's been he's still in the record books for us, and so he definitely deserves to be there. He did a lot for a lot of guys, and that's just not just on the football field. It's just as a person in general, how he tries to just make everyone better and all those kind of things, and goal-oriented, and just that attitude of success, and it just it trickles down. And so when you get older and older and older, even after football, you know, you kind of remember those things and pass those things along.
Absolutely. He had three straight 1,000-plus yard seasons and ran for 3,700 and some yards. And I think it was something like 600 or 700 yards more than anybody in our history. I think that maybe the next most was, I don't know, Leonard Henry was up there pretty close, like 3,100. But it's pretty remarkable, and it's just mind-boggling that he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So hopefully it'll be soon. Hopefully.
No doubt, and both of you get in there. That'll be awesome. But thanks,
I
man.
I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you guys, and we'll be talking again soon.
All right. Okay. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Here with another great Pirate, as we obviously have all throughout the year. You can always talk football, and with us right now, I know, Bubba, we got a very special guest.
Yeah, we do. This is a guy that was at ECU from 2008 to 2010. He's part of one of the best defensive lines in program history, and I'm talking about Josh Smith.
How you guys doing, man?
Doing all right.
Doing great. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, yeah, Josh, of course, I believe your career actually started at the Naval Academy. Is that correct?
It sure did.
And so you're from Raleigh, and refresh us, what high school did you attend?
I went to Garner High School here in Garner.
Okay, a very rich tradition there.
Absolutely.
In Garner. And so after you attended Garner, talk a little bit about your recruitment and going to Navy and take it from there.
I actually, my junior year of high school, the summer of after my junior year, I actually committed to East Carolina to John Thompson's staff at a camp, at a two-day camp. And of course they were terrible then, much like we were last year and the year before that and the year before that. So I decided I was going to go there, and then when Skip came, John Thompson got fired, Skip wanted to redshirt me, and of course I thought I was you know 7 foot tall and bulletproof, and I didn't need to be redshirted, so I was going to go somewhere I was going to play. So I decided I was going to go to the Naval Academy for some odd reason. Mostly because it was a great opportunity. I respect anybody that goes through that and can do that. It was not for me. As most people know, I'm not a great follower of directions. Kind of do my own thing and ask questions, and they don't like that there. So I lasted a whopping 8 months through the football season and finally said, you know, let's go somewhere else. So actually from there, Western Carolina picked me up and gave me a scholarship without really any film or watching me at all. I think one of their coaches had come to one of my high school games and seen me play and was like, yeah, well, sure, we'll let you come over here. And then I went over to Western Carolina and lost more games in one season than I had ever lost in high school and was not going to be a part of a program like that. Kent Briggs was the coach then, and he was about – never mind, I'm not going to say anything bad about him. He wasn't very good either. So I decided to call Skip. And he said, yeah, man, you can come back if you'd like, but we're going to make you walk on and you know, you'll have to earn your scholarship back. So I kind of took that upon myself and said, let's do it. For the support of my parents and kind of everybody around me, went back to East Carolina and originally was going to walk on in the fall and then figured out that, well, my God, if I walk on in the fall, I've got to go to practice every day, wake up for Coach Golden's 6 a.m. workouts and do all this kind of unnecessary stuff. And so I decided I was going to just not do that, and I'd come back in the spring. And that turned out to be a great decision. I came back in the spring, and we had some injuries, and Lindell Joseph, who's still one of my good buddies, said, well, that white boy right there is crazy enough to play D-line. And that's kind of how it started. And it's, you know, just history from there.
Josh, the D-line when you were here was so dominant. You know, Jay Rawls, Lindell Joseph.
Oh, yeah.
On down the line. Just talk about playing with those guys and how dominant you guys were. You know, particularly the 08 and 09 seasons. Just the unit itself was just – the front seven was – it just pushed everybody around in Conference USA, really.
Man, that was just the funnest experience, getting to play with those guys. And we were all so different dynamically in the way we played. You know, you had C.J. Wilson and Scotty Robinson and Zach Slate, who was, you know, 6'3", 240 pounds soaking wet, but played with, you know, attitude and desire and heart. And then you had guys like Jay Ross and Limble who were just beasts. You had Khalif Mitchell that played for a little bit, who then went on to play in Canada and in NFL and some other places. Man, it was fun. That group of guys, that defense, we could look over at Coach Hudd and he would just flick us off. That meant we could do whatever we wanted to. When you got a bunch of guys that can literally just look at each other and you know what they want to do, you know, Rock Rogerman, God rest his soul, one of the best coaches I've ever been around in my life. Coach Hudd, Rick Smith, I mean, Vernon Hargrave. I mean, it was just the whole dynamic of that defense was just absolutely awesome to be around. And it's something you miss. That brotherhood, you know, is definitely sorely missed.
What was your favorite game? We'll go by season. What was your favorite game of the 08 season? Do you have one that sticks out most? Was it the conference championship game against Tulsa? Was it the Virginia Tech game, West Virginia?
The conference championship game against Tulsa, probably. That was probably one of the funnier games we got that we played in. You know, going down there and just being a part of that. Of course, we started off that season beating Virginia Tech over there in Panther Stadium. That would be my first game. At 255 pounds playing nose guard was definitely a different kind of story for me. People always ask, how are you successful? And I was like, well, if I wasn't successful, I was going to die because I was only 250 pounds. You know, there's only two options there. It's either win or lose.
Yeah.
But it was definitely Virginia Tech, that first game there in Panther Stadium, and then definitely the Tulsa game. Just being a part of that, you know, that's something you never forget. You know, there's not too many games in 08 that really stick out because everyone, I mean, we beat West Virginia that year. I mean, there was just so many games. I remember that was the first time I rode down Fifth Street and we beat West Virginia and there was a couch burning and I was like, well, this is awesome. So, you know.
I'm going to ask you, you seem to, I normally wouldn't ask you guys, but you seem like I can ask you this. How many, I'll put it this way, I'll be G-rated with it. How many phone numbers get up the West Virginia game?
Oh, man.
Or did you have a girlfriend at the time? If you did, just
I had a girlfriend at the time, but she's probably getting married to somebody else, so we're good.
Okay, cool.
I got plenty of numbers. I made plenty of bad decisions, but I don't have any kids that I know of, so it all worked out well.
They were good decisions. They
turned out well. It turned out well.
Now, we fast forward to the 09 season, and yes, no question. I mean, was it the conference championship game against Houston?
Absolutely. Being at home and just being in that atmosphere and watching Van Eskridge catch that ball was just, I mean, there is just nothing that gets better than that.
You know, did the same damn thing the year before against Tulsa. Everybody always talks about him picking off Houston in the 09 game. He did the same thing the year before against Tulsa.
He sure did.
Fell down on the route, and he picked the ball off.
You know what? He sure did. Tulsa game, I will tell you, though, one of the funniest parts of that Tulsa game was when we were, you know, they just played that fast-paced offense, and we're standing on the field, and, you know, when Coach Hudd grabbed his throat, somebody was supposed to drop down and get a cramp. The only problem was, nobody knew who the hell that was supposed to be, so four people dropped at the same time with the same cramp, the same leg. That was how we slowed that game down a little bit. I don't know if that's good to say or not, but sure worked.
And there's no rule against it.
Hey, it was it definitely was probably one of the funnier things I've ever seen. I was kind of looking around like, that's not good.
Something else that was pretty cool about that 2009 game, the one against Houston, is Ron Franklin, the play-by-play announcer for ESPN. That's what he had actually been the play-by-play announcer for the Peach Bowl on January 1st, 92. So that was pretty cool.
Absolutely, man. That was just being there and being able to be in Greenville, and bringing that home, and just, I mean, just seeing that atmosphere. That's what I feel like was lost after Skip left, was just that motivation and that culture that we had. You know, the guys that were on that 08-09 team, and the 07 and before that, I mean, they had to work. We worked. We didn't have our names on jerseys. We didn't have 700 jerseys and 12 helmets and all this stupid stuff these guys have now. They really haven't earned. In my opinion, they haven't earned any of it. The guys before them earned it. And they're reaping the benefits of things, and they don't know what it's like. That's why I'm so excited for people like DK and Shank Lawler to be back. Because when we were in camp with Skip and those guys, we had a day that was all about East Carolina history and the history of Pirate football and what it meant to be a Pirate. And I feel like that was lost after that, with the coaching change and some other things that came in, because, you know, they didn't really know what it was like. Ruff played there, but he didn't portray that onto the other guys. They didn't, you know, they never had worked out in a crappy environment and didn't have the locker room that we had. They came into a brand new everything, with a winning culture that was already there, but didn't earn any of it. So
that's kind of along those same
on that.
I'm sorry. Kind of along those same lines, of course, Rick Smith was, he's someone who's going to shoot straight with you. As you well know, even though he wasn't your position coach, he was on that staff.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, came back under Coach Ruff as our defense coordinator. But he's someone on Pirate Radio that he was very outspoken. He was, of course, on Scotty Montgomery's first staff and didn't agree with how we practiced, saying it was not physical enough. So talk a little bit about a typical practice under the Skip Holtz regime.
HUD ran those practices, man. I mean, if you did something wrong, I remember that 09 season, we didn't have any missed assignment. There were several games where the defense as a whole had no missed assignments. It was drilled into your head every day. If you can't play base, you can't play anything else. There's no need for 700 different defenses if you cannot execute your base package. If you go out there and you're two-hand touching everybody and you got somebody like Brian Mitchell, you know, great guy, but he didn't have any business being a D coordinator. No business at all. You can't motivate me by saying flippity-flipping and you didn't cuss at me when I came from somebody like Coach HUD who motivated you, who cared. Somebody like Coach Rock who came to my class every single day to make sure you were sitting in the front row. And you better be sitting in that damn class, because, you know, good and well, if you weren't, you were doing 200 yards of rolling like a log down the daggum field. You were going to do up, down, so you threw up. There was just a different vibe. You know, I unfortunately, being injured, you know, half of my senior season, I didn't have to practice as much, and it really took a toll on my play, probably, because there wasn't that time I had to be, you know. When we were with Coach Rock, we did dots every day. I could run that defense in my sleep. I could still do it right to this minute. Coach HUD, when that man whistled, he still does it. If he's around us, we could be in a crowd of 10,000 people. If you played for that man, if he whistles, you will turn around and find him. That's just how I still have it in me. And I know all the guys that played for him would do the same exact thing. We would ride and die for those guys. Coach Rick Smith, one of the best coaches I've ever been around. He'd tell you straight. He'd tell you if you suck. He'd tell you if you weren't fast enough. He'd look right at you and say, "Don't get beat deep." I'll never forget him looking at one of the safeties one day and saying, "They're going to throw it deep. Don't get beat deep." And I'll be damned if they didn't listen to him and they threw it right over his head And he took him out and he sat his ass on the bench and said, well, you ain't going to go in no more because you can't listen. Simple stuff like that.
What kind of difference do you think it would have made in 2010? You know, Rick Smith came back to be Russ's defensive coordinator in 2013. What kind of difference do you think it would have made from the beginning if Russ would have made the decision, or, you know, maybe if Rick, maybe Rick didn't want to, maybe he wanted to follow Skip, but let's say, you know, just pretend Rick Smith had stayed on as defensive and got promoted from secondary coach to defensive coordinator under Ruffin from day one. What kind of difference do you think that would have made?
Well, you can ask Greg Hudson, man. I mean, he'll tell you right now he's learned more from listening to Rick Smith speak. Coach Hud used to say all the time when Coach Smith was in our meetings, our defensive meetings, he would say, you know, a wise man really speaks, he'll only listen, and a wise man would listen to Rick Smith. That's just a fact. Those two worked together, I mean, like father and son. Right. It was just a dynamic, man, that until you were in that room, and very few people got to be in that room because we were such a tight-knit group, that you just can't explain. And I do. I love Ruff to death as a person, you know, but I don't think he's a head coach. That's just my opinion, and that's how I think about it. So,
you know, if he ain't, Scotty Montgomery definitely won't, because you talk about Rick Smith. Rick had great things to say about Skip. He had good things to say about Ruff. He did not have many good things to say about
Skip. No, he did not.
1 year working for Scotty Montgomery.
No, I remember sitting around with him and him talking about that. And that was always something that he just, you know, when you don't give somebody like Rick Smith the reins to do what he wants to do, you're going to create animosity. You're going to create some flack and some kickback. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons that I haven't been as present around that program, you know, when Scotty was hired, is that they didn't take any time to know the former players. They didn't take any time to get to know anybody, nor ask them any questions or, you know, anything. So that was probably, you know, my biggest turn off with that. I haven't been to a game in probably 3 years for that very reason.
Well, you talk about getting to know former players and all, Coach Mike Houston, obviously, our new head coach, and he, you know, brings back Donnie Kay and Shane,
yep.
Two guys you're familiar with. You know,
yep.
Coach Houston, we did the guys here, me and Dave and Bubba, we had a reunion party for the 1978 Independence Bowl champion team, East Carolina team that beat La Tech under Coach Pat Dye in the 78 Independence Bowl.
And, oh, yeah.
Coach Mike Houston made a surprise appearance.
Really?
At that party, he sure did. We were interviewing Pat Dye. Mike Houston walked in the room, and we had a chance to have Mike Houston talking to Pat Dye on our podcast. And he stood up after he got done talking to Pat Dye and addressed all the members of the 1978 team. And I'm sure this would go to all the members of the 08, 09 team and whenever. He wanted everybody, all the players, to know that they're all welcome. You know, at practice, on the sideline, anytime they want to be there.
That's fantastic, man, because, I mean, I remember standing on the field one time, and another player, I'm not going to say any names, that has a Super Bowl ring, was standing on the outside of the fence, and they wouldn't let him in. And I had to give him my field pass so that he could get in on the field. Stuff like that was what really turned me off.
Oh, wow.
There should be, you know, when we have to fight tooth and nail to get tickets or to do anything. I'm a little bit different because I'm just four. I'll just walk up in there and do whatever I want to. That's just my personality. And people just say, well, that's just Josh. That's what he's going to do. But there's other people that don't do that. And they don't have that ability or, you know, and they should feel welcome. Everybody should feel welcome from the person that didn't play a snap. If you contributed to East Carolina football in any way, shape, or form, you should be able to come back to your school. You should be able to walk in that stadium and feel back at home. You should be able to walk in that weight room and talk to somebody. You know, our athletic department, I do love those guys to death. J.J. McLamb, who's one of the greatest people in the world, you know, he put up with me for a long time. You know, that's what I'm hoping changes. And it seems like that's the direction we're going. I know getting, you know, Donnie Kay and Shank back is just a huge positive. I was so excited when I heard that, and I've heard nothing but positive vibes from Mike Houston. So I'm just excited for Pirate football again.
Yeah, I think we all are.
one of the parts of that story that Kyle left out is pretty funny, Josh, is we, like you said, we had Pat Dye on the phone, and before Coach Houston arrived, Pat Dye said, was that new coach there? And we're like, no coach Dye, he hasn't stopped by yet. And he said, well, you tell him, and I said he needs to get his ass there. it was pretty funny.
That's all I've heard, man. Is everything I've seen and read is nothing but good vibes. And he seems to be positive in this new AD and everybody else we got around. With the stadium expansion, we need Pirate Club sales to go up. We need season tickets to be sold. We need people to be at those games. I want to be at those games. I really do. But I'm not going to drive all the way to Greenville and spend my entire Saturday to watch an ass kicking. That's not fun. I can watch ass kicking from my living room, and I can get up and leave at halftime.
Exactly.
That's a lot of the pirate nation's thinking. Unfortunately, I'm one of the people that's outspoken enough to say it because I just don't care. But that's everybody wants to know what the problem is. Well, that's exactly what the problem is. Nobody wants to go and spend money to watch somebody lose and to watch a team that doesn't execute, that makes mental mistakes, that doesn't follow through with simple things. There's a lot of things that are intangibles in football. And if you don't have those intangibles, like a desire, it's not going to work. You can be the most talented person in the world, but someone like myself who didn't have all the physical attributes that somebody like Limbaugh had, I had to work harder. I had no choice. And I was helped out by my teammates and my coaches who cared and who were motivating. And that's what we need back. And that's what we seem to have. So I'm excited about it.
No, absolutely. And it goes even deeper with the fans than even the product on the field and what we had under Scotty Montgomery with the lack of success and his inability to motivate the football team. Mm-hmm. It goes back to, a lot of the fans were alienated by Jeff Confer, the previous athletic director, and the way he treated people. If you weren't a upper tier donor, a millionaire damn near it, he basically acted like your opinion didn't matter. And
exactly. That's very true. I remember meeting him on several occasions, and I'm a pretty noticeable person. I stand out. I have tattoos. I look I'm not normal by any means. And I had to introduce myself to him on several occasions, basketball games, football games. I was just like, have you lost your mind? Why is this continuing to happen? And it was like that with everybody. And he just had a scowl on his face all the time that I just wanted to wipe off. But I'm glad he's gone, so we're good.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the thing, Josh, like you referenced, I met him prior to the 2013 game against ODU, and it was the opening of the Smith Williams Center, and I had a high-ranking Pirate Club member introduce me, and I wasn't trying to tell him my life story. I know it was game day, and he's being pulled in a lot of different directions, but he didn't have that way of engaging you the way Terry Holland did. But so I was just telling him that there was a guy at the high school that I was coaching at the time who happened to be Giannis Bowden that had committed to us, just so he could make that connection. And the whole time I was having a conversation with him, he was turned sideways talking to Jay Batt, not paying me a bit of attention. So
that don't surprise me, no.
From the time that happened, like, I just knew, I was like, why did anybody think this guy's a fit?
Exactly. And that's not what Pirates are. That's what's killing me. Pirates are people like Cliff Godwin. Pirates are people like Mike Houston and Steve Shankbiler and Donnie Kirkpatrick who come back. Shank's here for the third time. That's all it takes. I mean, I had Terry Holland's cell phone number in my phone. I used to text him, and I called him TH. I could text that man anything at any point in time, and that was not the vibe I got from any staff member that was there under Scotty Montgomery. And like I said, I loved Ruff staff to death. I love those guys, except for Brian Mitchell. I thought he was a freaking idiot. But I could not stand that man. Good God. Why you take something that was working the 2 years before and just change it all together just completely baffles me, when that was what the recruits were there for. That was what the people that you had, the personnel you had on the field, Maybe going to change to some kind of 3-4 reading crap defense that clearly didn't work because they went from, what, 20th in the country to, you know, 169th or whatever the hell we were. We were below the last person.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, I think Russ in the greatest position he could possibly be in at, you know, Oklahoma right now. He's a director of player personnel. You know, he gets to love them up. That's what Russ does. He's a great recruiter. He's a great person. He's a great mentor. And, you know, I wish him all the best. I'm just glad the culture's changing. And if somebody like me has to go in there and talk to him and tell him what pirate culture is, I feel like the 08 and 09 guys need to show up in a damn bus and let them know what the real deal is.
You mentioned Terry Holland earlier. And I'm like you, I had a great relationship with Terry Holland. I think everybody who wanted to have a great relationship with Terry Holland did.
Yeah, like, absolutely. He allowed you to. Yeah, he allowed you to.
And, you know, I used to email it almost on a daily basis at one point during the whole conference realignment situation. I would email Terry Holland almost daily. Now, think about what this man was dealing with during conference realignment. And he would email me back every time. Give me news. Give me behind the scenes information that, based on my donor level to the Pirate Club, I had no right knowing. And I mean, that's just how he was. If you cared and he knew you knew your stuff, he felt free to give you information to talk to you.
Absolutely.
And you brought in, you know, they bring in Jeff Comfort, who was the polar opposite of Terry Holland.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it was terrible. And I think John Gilbert now, I don't think John Gilbert's Terry Holland, but he damn sure isn't Jeff Comfort.
That's a damn truth, I can tell you that. Yeah, he's, you know, I don't think there's going to be ever another Terry Holland. But you know, I think we got close.
Yeah, John Gilbert seems like a good guy. I do know that he has a good reputation for having good relationships with the student athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned having Terry Holland's cell phone number. I heard John Gilbert gave, or maybe that was at USM. I don't know if that was at USM he did that, or if that was here in East Carolina, that he gave all the student athletes his personal cell phone number.
And that's something that you should do. It's no different. He's no different than a head coach. I mean, there's sometimes, you know, where sometimes if you've got an issue, sometimes you don't want to go talk to your head coach about it. Sometimes you want to talk to somebody else. And as long as you've got that open, communication with people, that's all these guys want. Everybody has to remember these guys are between 18 and 21 years old. I mean, we're youngins in college playing football. You have things you run into. You have crisis in life. You know, everybody thinks that college football players got it made. We don't go to class and all of our work gets done for us or some crazy shit like that. That's not how that works. You know, we go through hard times. We go through the ringer. To be able to reach out to somebody like your athletic director that's not your head coach. Sometimes, like I said, you just don't want to put that on your head coach. And if you can have somebody you can confide in, then that's just, you know, it's just more kudos to him.
No, absolutely. I agree with 100%. I mean, it's like you said, the AD needs to have a good relationship not only with the donors and the fans, but he needs to have a good relationship with student athletes. He's the athletic director. Bubba was mentioning earlier, Josh, remember he had a view of right before you were running out on the field for senior day in 2010, he noticed that you had a big mouthful of bubble tape.
Man. Well, see, my senior season, I decided it would be a great idea not to play with a mouthpiece in because I had to talk all the time, tell defensive line what play was going to run. Most of the time, I was having to somebody like Justin Dixon. I was having to tell him actually where he was going to go because he had no idea. Bless his heart. So I would dip during the games. I'd spit on your hand. But Coach Golden held my dip cannon many a game. I remember me and Zach Slate actually at the Tulsa game and the Tulsa championship game. I took a dip from a Tulsa fan, and they loved me for it because you know that game, those fans are like right there behind you. And I remember walking over and we ran out of dip on the sidelines, and I looked over at Slate and I said, "Do you have anything, bud?" And he said, "No." The guy behind me was just putting a fat one in. I walked right up to him and said, "Bud, can I please have one of those where I have a mild heart attack?" He sure did. He gave me one. And those Tulsa fans loved us the rest of the game. They didn't say a daggum word.
But yeah, 2010, man, I put one in and didn't think about it. Walked right out, and of course we got the, you know, at that time the second largest screen in the nation. And there I was with what looked like a 10 by 10 dip in my mouth. So, but Coach Ruff, who had a refrigerator full of Copenhagen, thought it was funny and pointed up at the stadium, or pointed up at the scoreboard, and he said, "God, I love you." And I said, "I love you too, Coach." And,
now, what is your brand of choice? Are you Copenhagen Skull?
No, Grizzly Wintergreen, my friend. Dark Wintergreen nowadays.
Okay. Now, see, I never was a dip guy, but I used to chew, and I'd always go with a little Taylor's Pride or maybe Levi Garrett.
Oh, I hear you. So, yeah, Coach Ruff, man, he put a whole just upper decker in. He'd do the whole ring atop of his mouth and fall asleep with it in the bus.
I never knew Coach dip.
Oh my God, he did like, oh yes, sir. That's all he did. He must have been sponsored by him, because I'm gonna tell you, he had a little mini fridge in his office that was full of nothing but Copenhagen logs, just log after log. If you ran out of dip, you could go right up to his office. You find all of it you wanted.
It was a country song by a guy named Chris LeDoux called Copenhagen. makes me feel so good.
Yes, sir. I'm going to tell you what, he must have felt good all the time, because Coach Ruff had one in about 24-7.
I somehow didn't. Bubba, were you aware of that?
Which part?
The Coach Ruff dipped on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was, because actually Coach Ruff had been the defense coordinator at Appalachian and had some really good Appalachian friends, and my dad had played in the golf tournament, the Yosef Club tournament, with Coach Ruff, and he said Coach Ruff loved the dip.
Oh, I love that man to death. He's a great person. Like I said, he's in the best role he could possibly be in with Lincoln over there at Oklahoma, and God. I would love to see him. I'd love to see all them crazy boys. That staff was a fun staff full of young guys that we had a good time with, minus Brian Mitchell.
Well, now, you know, the more and more you mention Ruff dipping, and it just makes more and more sense why Jeff Confer and a few other people didn't like Ruff and wanted him out of here. It just becomes more and more abundantly clear all the time.
Look, man, that's the thing, man, is, you know, people like Ruff, they bled purple. That man would have stayed here forever. And you could have put him in the same role he was in, that he's in now at Oklahoma. He probably would have been great. That man could recruit. He could get, when he talked to you, he touched you. And he wanted to touch you, because if you touch somebody while you're talking to them, they're going to look at you. It's hard to look away from somebody that's touching your shoulder or touching your, or has your hand on their, or has their hand on your heart while they're talking. And that's why so many guys loved him, because when he talked to you, he was sincere. And that was what the sad thing was about the way it all went down. I still don't agree with the way it went down. I don't agree with, you know, that's the reason we had to go hire Scotty Montgomery. It's stupid. But
no,
you know, it is what it is.
Right. And, you know, we're reliving the past at this point. Thank God we got Coach Houston in here. But the whole thing is, it would have worked itself out anyway. If he couldn't coach, if it was all Lincoln Riley, then in one more year we would have found it out, and nobody would have had the problem with it they did when he was dismissed in 2015.
Exactly.
But
yeah,
Jeff Confer just had too big of an ego. And anyway, we're reliving stuff. To thank God all those people are gone.
That's the daggone truth. I can tell you what. Like I said, man, I'm just excited that they've wiped that slate clean and we've got some good guys back in there. And like I said, I want to go to a game now. I want to give them some money. I want to do some things for them, man. I used to do a lot of work out there. Everything that was pressure washed out there when I owned my company down there in Greenville, I did, you know, near about for free. Gift in kind and all that stuff.
What are you doing now? Are you still in the pressure washing business?
I still wash every now and then, but I'm building houses, and I'm hopefully going to hear soon switch over to the commercial side of things, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm back here in Raleigh, and I'm going to go from there. And like, I was down at the Beats in Moorhead with CJ and Curtis and all them, and I'm good. I'm very close with that family, and, you know, finally had to get back to Raleigh and get back to where they like to pay you money and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot more money to be made, particularly if you're building houses in the Triangle than there is down east, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what it is.
Absolutely.
Well, Bobby, got anything else for Josh?
That's what, Josh, you've been so generous with your time. We really appreciate you coming on such short notice. I know I reached out to you for the first time a couple
days ago, and we really appreciate you coming on because you were someone that we wanted to have on anyway, and we didn't make a contact with Marcus, like I said, and so we didn't know if he was going to be able to do it tonight, so we really appreciate you coming on as well, and we certainly look forward to having you back sometime.
Absolutely, man. We get sort of starting to get cranked up. Y'all got something y'all need outlandish answers to, y'all let me know. Yeah, I'll be happy to give them to you.
In the future, we're going to be hopefully planning something to remember and celebrate the 08-09 championship teams are coming up. We just celebrated the 5th anniversary of 08 and coming up on the 10th anniversary of the 09 championship. So probably be reaching out to you and some of your teammates about maybe doing something for that in the future.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to get up with them. We still all talk and make fun of each other on a regular basis. So you let me know and I'll be there.
All right.
No doubt. We look forward to hearing some Coach Hud stories.
Oh, there's plenty of them, I can tell you.
We had the opportunity to hear one this summer from Harold Robinson when Hud moved his car to the 50-yard line in Dowdy Ficklin.
Bo, we used to torment Harold Robinson more than any human. We put raccoons in his office.
Oh, my.
We took that man, bless his heart, we mommocked him to death. We took his TV one time and put it in the place of his computer monitor. But it was the old school TV, like the box TVs, and it took him a whole day to figure out that was a TV in front of his desk. So he didn't do shit all day because he didn't have a computer. So I don't know what he was doing. He was staring right at that blank screen all day long. Bless his heart.
That's fantastic.
I remember back in the spring of 2018, he was on Pirate Radio. And Hud was on Pirate Radio there a couple weeks later, and he was asking Troy D, he said, did Harold have a mouth full of marbles the whole time he was talking?
He does. Yeah, absolutely. He's like a little chipmunk. So, bless his heart. But yeah, you guys let me know. I'll think of some good stories. We got stories about Coach Golden's staff in the weight room, and we used to shoot clay pigeons in there, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Alright, we appreciate it so much, and really appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to catching up down the road. And that's Josh Smith, Pirate Nation.
Absolutely, you guys. Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Josh.
All right, man.
All right, take care.
Yes, sir. We'd like to thank Marcus Crandall and Josh Smith for coming on with us tonight. And for Dave Richmond and Bubba Rosenbaum, this has been the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.